mountains mingle with the river, and the rivers with the ocean. The winds of heaven mix forever with a sweet emotion. Nothing in the world is single, thing is single. All things by a law divine. If one another's been mingled, why not I with thine, not I with thine? Ooh. See the mountains kiss high hand, and the waves cross one another. No sister flower would be forgiven if it disdained its brother. And the sunlight clasps the earth, and the moonbeams kiss the sea. What are all these kissings worth if
you're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL. Good afternoon. I'm Jay Pierce, in for Cheryl Weedy, who would have been in for Celeste Quinn. But Cheryl is on other assignment this afternoon, so I'm glad to be here because this is an exciting program. We'll be talking about the 30th anniversary of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And we began the program there with a bit of the King's Singers, one of the groups which will be performing their performance coming up in November on the 14th. We'll talk more about that as the program goes along this afternoon. We'll be talking about some of the history of the Krannert Center, what the Krannert Center is today, and where it's headed in the future, perhaps, as well as what will be happening during this 30th anniversary season. Quite a bit planned. And my guests on the program this afternoon include... and I want to get the titles right, so I'm going to go officially off the sheet here. Michael Ross, who is the director, is easy. Rebecca McBride is the Associate Director of Marketing and Patron Services. Did I get that all in there?
You got all of it.
And Frank Reposh is the past president of the Krannert Students, Krannert Center Student Association, and we'll want to find out more about what that's all about as well this afternoon. I have some questions. I'm sure these people have a lot to say, and if you do too, if you have some questions or comments about the Krannert Center, maybe some memories to share, maybe it's been a special part of your life life over these past 30 years, 333-9455 is the telephone number if you're in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 1-800-222-9455 if you're outside the metro area, 333-WILL, and toll-free 1-800-222-WILL. And I thought I'd start with a line that comes off of, it comes out of the New York Times, the music critic Harold Schoenberg, and he's quoted as having said that Krannert indeed runs an operation that Lincoln Center could well envy. And I think that's well put. Myself.
I think that's beautifully put. If I may, and this is Mike Ross speaking, I would like to start this off by saying that I have been here just 1 year. This is my first anniversary as the director of the Krannert Center. But having come from New York, and I'm very familiar and very friendly with a number of people at Lincoln Center, including the president and others, I would echo that statement now having been here a year. And in fact, I have echoed that statement with Nat Leventhal, the president of Lincoln Center. I have had some fun talking to Nat about what it's like being at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. This is a fantastic place, and it is unequaled in its and remind them to think about what this center has meant to them over the 30 years that it's been in existence.
And Michael Ross, you are the sixth director of the Krannert Center since it opened 30 years ago. I don't know if you were on the program last year. I only came to the station in April, so I can only speak to what's happened since April. But I don't know if you've had a chance on on our airwaves on WILL to talk. And perhaps a year later, you've had a chance to reflect on what kind of a role you stepped into, what kind of a history there was that you were taking on as you came into this job.
Well, I was well aware of Krannert Center as a physical plant. It is such a monumental facility, and 30 years ago it was visionary and unprecedented in its size and scope of purpose. So I was quite aware of the physical features of the facility and also aware of its very strong reputation as a host to many of the world's finest performing artists that are frequently seen in places like Lincoln Center, the Kennedy Center, and other places. But it wasn't until I got here and spent some time here, in those first couple of months, I realized how strong the connection was between the center and the community. Mm-hmm. The level of community support, both in terms of sheer financial support, but also in terms of interest, is very. It's uncommon. It is uncommon, and that is one of the things that was the biggest surprise and most pleasant surprise for me.
Well, you think of what a jewel a center like this is to a community of 100,000 people in a largely rural area. And I can tell you from places that I've been in and where I've lived, it is rare indeed to come upon to such a cultural mecca. I would go so far as to say, with performances coming up by the Russian National Ballet, Gene Redpath. It's so diverse too. Capitol Steps will be there as a part of the season. Chick Corea, the King's Sisters, as we mentioned, Coco Taylor. And it would just take so long to list everyone who will be here, the Moscow Philharmonic, the Emerson String Quartet, and, of course, not to mention the theatrical performances, which will be there. There's so much going on at the Krannert Center in the different venues, a number of venues. I think sometimes there is a misconception that Krannert Center is one large auditorium in itself, and we forget about the performances that take place in the Studio Theater, the Amphitheater, the Tryon Festival Theater. It's a complex. And perhaps, Rebecca, you might want to talk about how it is to keep all of this. It's a lot of balls to juggle sometimes and keep the information straight and get it out to the public.
The level of activity at Krannert Center is mind-boggling, and I don't believe that most people actually see how high of a level of activity is in the building on a day-to-day basis, from 6 a.m. to midnight. The halls of Krannert Center are buzzing, and it is a large complex, and getting the information out about the events is probably not as challenging, although that is challenging, as keeping all the balls up in the air from a production standpoint, audio, scene shop, costume rental or costume shop design. There's just an amazing place where education and professional artists come together, and professional staff are working side by side with students learning their craft. And it is an amazing place, not to mention the amounts of people that come in for catered events, social events, conferences, seminars. So it's really an exciting place all around in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been through Krannert Center over the 30 years that it's been here. I remember in its early days coming down from the Chicago area to a graduation ceremony, mm-hmm. I believe, that was in Krannert.
That's correct.
At the time. Yeah, and before they moved to Assembly Hall.
I don't remember how many graduation ceremonies. Frank, you might know that better than me. How many graduation ceremonies we do every spring?
I think we did about 8 in one day. Uh-huh. I know we turned around about 4,000 people in an 8-hour period.
I think the actual number is 16. There are 16 graduation ceremonies that happen
for individual
every
colleges,
spring,
individual
units,
individual
units and departments. Correct.
Yeah, yeah. It's a wonderful facility. Let's talk just a bit about the history of it. if we might. And Michael, if you'd want to talk about that, about how Krannert began, how it got its roots, and what the mission then was, and perhaps what the mission today is.
Well, the mission today is just about precisely what it was when it was conceived 30 years ago and established. That mission being essentially a dual mission to provide the to serve both the public service mandate of the university and the educational mandate of the university. By public service, we mean bringing into contact with the members of this community in this region artists of varying backgrounds, disciplines, but all having as a common bind that ties a level of achievement and excellence that positions them in the highest echelon of the performing artists of the world. On the educational side, Krannert Center houses the departments of theater, opera, and dance, the opera department itself being a sub component of the School of Music, which has its own building across the street from Krannert Center. But in those three programs especially, the levels of interaction and support that are given the students and the faculty through Krannert Center's resources as a premier facility, and our commitment to education and bringing those constituents into contact with the outside professional artists, that has been there from the very beginning, and that's where we are today, and we are looking to simply strengthen our ability to deliver on those goals as we look ahead in future decades. Mm-hmm. We had, it was very fortunate earlier last week, the New York Times ran an article on the 30th anniversary of Krannert Center, and the fact that Dee Dee Bridgewater, who just won the Grammy for Best Jazz Vocal Work, got her start at the Krannert Center. Mm-hmm. And she came back, and we invited her back to be the opening artist in our marquee season this year. That in a way suggests a lot about the history of Krannert. Yeah. How this is a place where young people, aspiring young artists in training, can come and get extraordinary experiences. Mm-hmm. Before Krannert Center was built, there was not an institution in this country that put together the components of visiting professional artistry with the training of young artists in this comprehensive kind of way. Mm-hmm. So that remains a very unique feature. Many other centers have been...
It was made possible through a generous gift of...
a most generous gift.
Of the Krannerts.
An awesomely generous... Mm-hmm. philanthropic mm-hmm. stroke.
Herman and Elnora Krannert.
Herman was an engineer, happened to invent this this thing that caught on, corrugated cardboard, and very quickly amassed a very large body of wealth, and had a tie with the university, and his wife, Elnora, very much interested in the performing arts, very much felt that it was important for people to have a wonderful place to gather to experience top-level artistry and for young people to become trained in the arts. It was actually Elnora's idea that the huge lobby, which is actually floored in an acre and a half of teak wood, roughly the size of 9 tennis courts. By the way, the entire 1968 U.S. allotment of imported teak wood is right there in Krannert Center. No one else in the country could get teak wood there. But she wanted there to be a phenomenal gathering place where people could mingle, commingle as they came out of the various theaters at the center. I think the kind of philanthropic impulse that the Krannerts have remains extraordinary. To duplicate that gift today would take a gift of no less than $125, $150 million.
And at that time, it was about a $21 million building, I believe.
Yes.
30
yeah,
years
and actually,
ago.
there were some overruns that brought it up a little, a little further after that. Yeah.
Well, that's taken for granted.
That's right. Yeah. There's a wonderful little story that goes along with that gift. The original pledge and the original estimate on the construction was X, and roughly in that $20 million range. As they got through on the construction, it turned out that it was costing them a little bit more. So a couple of members of the university community. I'm certain, rather sheepishly and perhaps reluctantly, went back to Mrs. Cranard and asked if she could see her way to increasing their gift to complete the construction, to which she apparently responded, okay, I'll give you $5 million, but not a penny more. That kind, like I said, that kind of generosity is rare.
Yeah, I would say. That happens, though, at U of I. Here, the building that we're in right now, the Generosity of the Campbells. That's the name, the Campbell Hall for Telecommunication, Public
Indeed.
Telecommunication. Beautiful Indeed. Facility. Moving in after our temporary facilities of 55 years in Gregory Hall.
I managed to see those just before they all came down, just after I got here, and it was quite a change.
It's quite a change. Yeah. That's Michael Ross, the director of the Cranard Center for the Performing Arts, and Rebecca McBride, the associate director of marketing and patron services, and Frank Reposh, past president of the Cranard Center Student Association, are in studio today. Your telephone calls are welcome at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL or toll-free at 1-800-222-WILL. That's 1-800-222-9455. I'm Jay Pearson for Celeste Quinn. Feel free to join the conversation or just sit back and listen if that's what you'd rather do. Let's get I do have one thing I have to get to first of all, and then we'll talk about the 30th anniversary season a little bit. I noticed in the materials that I was sent was there's now a Cranard Blend coffee available. I don't know why that stuck out, but Rebecca, do you want to take that?
I would love to take
pointing
that.
At you.
That would be great.
It just seems to fit for some reason.
It does, doesn't it? And our Intermezzo Cafe has worked extremely hard over the last year redesigning the menu and bringing some exciting new food and coffee to our patrons. It's a absolutely wonderful cafe, and our coffee blends are named Encore French Roast, Full House, that's our house coffee, and Diva Decaf. Yes. And you can actually buy the whole bean, or come in just for a cup. And the one nice thing about Intermezzo and also the Promenade, our little gift shop, is that every time you buy something in those, you know that part of that money is going to support the arts. We use that income from those two operations as well as costume rental and various other income-generating operations of our center to go right back into our operating budget to help us support what goes on the stage. So you kind of a win-win situation.
Great. Perhaps I was thinking about that, I think, because we just bought a new coffee maker at home last night. That caught me. We do have a telephone caller on line one. Let's go to line one. You're on the air, Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon.
Yeah, this is George R. Carlisle of Urbana, regular patron of Cranard. I'd like to know why, with D.D. Bridgewater being so sold out as quickly as it, why that was not in the Folinger Great Hall, and if there's a special reason, I'm glad that at least the speakers were placed in the Intermezzo, so those of us who did not have tickets could listen to the performance.
I missed this is Mike again, Mike Ross. I missed the beginning of that because I didn't have my headphones on. But is the question why Dee Dee's performance was in the Festival Theater as opposed to the
Great
Hall?
That's right. Yeah.
That has entirely to do with the production requirements for Dee Dee's trio. That is to say, the amplification requirements for the combo. And as you probably know, jazz combos in not only in this country but abroad, when they are playing in concert theater venues, do require and, in fact, insist upon amplified support. And the acoustics of our Great Hall are so rich, as you probably know from experiences in the Great Hall, that when there is any significant level of amplification applied to the music making, it becomes very mushy, and it loses all the clarity and sonic detail that you really want to have when you're listening to a performer. So that's the reason. It was just the Great Hall was, acoustically speaking, ironically, not the right place for Dee Dee.
Well, thanks for the call. It was a good question, and it's interesting to learn some of the production elements that are involved in that. Let's talk about we have a call online, too, so let's go as long as we have folks on the phone. And then I do want to get to talking about the upcoming season and talk a little about the response to the Dee Dee Bridgewater show, which was fantastic, and I understand it was a fantastic show. But first, let's go to line two. You're on the Afternoon Magazine. Hello.
Yeah, hi. This is probably a pretty mundane question, but there used to be a bicycle rack in the parking deck there. I can't seem to find it anymore. Is that gone and not coming back? And if so, why?
Rebecca gets that question.
I'll be happy to answer that. When we redid the garages, there was a change in the bicycle racks, but there is a bicycle rack. It is now located over on the south side of the complex, just outside of the parking garage entrances. There's plenty of places to park your bike, and we know that we have a lot of patrons and a lot of visitors that ride bikes, and you can put it right there.
Okay, but there's no covered parking then for bikes.
That's correct. They took it out of the parking garages themselves.
Uh-huh. Well, it might be nice to have it covered, too, but I guess cars get priority, unfortunately.
We'll take that under advisement. Thanks for the comment.
Okay. All thank right. you, then.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, well, it's fine. Good place to air these kinds of things.
Yes. Get right we to welcome the, our, any comments.
To the source here. And if you'd like to join us on the telephone, 222-WILL or 1-800-333-WILL are our telephone numbers. Dee Dee Bridgewater, great performance, I understand, from people I talked to. And not only Dee Dee, but Amisong was part of it. And just a whole evening of activities for the opening of this 30th anniversary season. And we got to talk with Tammy Kitka about that last week right before it opened. I heard the fireworks from my house. Unfortunately, I was tied up with something else that night that I couldn't get out of. I was agonizingly trying to, but couldn't. But a good way to start the season, I guess. It was a very satisfying night.
It was great fun. And I what was most rewarding for me personally was seeing the entire building come alive with the performing arts. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Amisong. They performed in our amphitheater just before Dee Dee came on, and they were followed by the University Black Chorus,
right,
under the direction of Volley Watts Davis. But simultaneously, we had music in the lobby, we had music in the garages.
Parking lots, yeah.
In the parking lots, yeah. That's, by the way, that's one of the things that I really got excited about when I first visited Cranford Center, was that underground parking lot. That's a great facility, a great facility. But the entire building was alive. We had hundreds of people out listening to the choruses in the amphitheater and watching the fireworks kicking the season off. It was wonderful, because having so many people come out not just to hear Dee Dee, but also to just participate in the launch of the season, really, it was very gratifying for us to see students all over the place, young families all over the place. And the amphitheater you mentioned earlier on has actually not been used over the three decades to any significant degree at all as a performance venue. And it's one of the things that Frank and the Cranford Center Student Association started experimenting with a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it certainly, when I arrived at the center, I was smitten by the presence of wonderful symbolic architectural reference to centuries and centuries past, and the fact that it does bring the outside in to the performing arts at Cranford was a wonderful thing. So that was just a remarkable evening, I felt, all the way around. We've had loads of comments. Dee Dee herself, I think, was very touched by having been invited back to the center, and I think that she expressed herself very eloquently and movingly over the course of her performance as to what it meant to come back to a place like this, having now achieved Grammy Award-winning status.
Yeah. We have another telephone caller. Let's go to line four. Line four on the Afternoon Magazine. Hi, where are you calling from?
From Joliet.
Okay, from Joliet.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention 30 years ago, I was a graduate student at U of I in the theater department, and I was in the first show that opened it, Galileo by Bertolt Brecht, and Clara Beringer directed it.
Fantastic.
And nobody famous ever came out of the show but that I know of. But, Lynn Thigpen was down there at the time. She was an undergraduate, also from Joliet. She's quite well known as an actress in New York. But I don't know, I'm sure you know it, but at the time it was a great thing when they opened it. The light board in the main theater was the second computer-controlled lighting system in the world. It was built by a man, it was either Einstein or Eisenstein, and he had done one in New York, I think, for Lincoln Center. And they just had a devil of a time because it, obviously it was brand new when it opened, and it, the bugs had a mind of their own. And the principle on a computerized lighting system, obviously, is that you can pre-program everything, and then no matter how complicated, you just push a button. And they'd get the strangest lighting and sound effects from some of those shows. An absolutely beautiful theater then, and it's, I've seen it since then, and it has certainly aged very gracefully.
I agree that it has aged gracefully, and you'll probably not be all that surprised to know that the lighting equipment has been upgraded.
I'm
since
sure.
those bugs did not subside entirely over the years, and they actually created a few more problems than people would have liked to have had. So
I don't know if people have ever had if you have tours, you probably do, but it was amazing at the time that the shop area was all connected by underground hallways to all the various stages. That was remarkable because if you ever worked in theater, you're always working 2 miles away and then hauling by truck
right. yeah.
everything and no place to store anything. And they just had a remarkable system of hallways and doorways that everything fit through. And it was really designed very nicely.
It is a fantastically elegant design and completely functional in that regard.
Thanks a lot for calling and
okay.
sharing with us. Yeah, that's a great memory, isn't
yeah.
it?
Thank you.
I've been down in the shop area. A friend of mine who came to U of I in the early 1970s worked at Krannert in theater design. We were in theater technology up in the Chicago area through high school and then afterwards a little bit. And then he came to school down here and stayed. And I came down and visited him once, and he gave me a tour, and I was just amazed.
I'd actually like to ask Frank, who has given many a tour. There are daily at 2:30 every afternoon, anyone can come into Krannert Center and get a full-blown tour. And it's fantastically interesting. Frank, why don't you share with the listeners a few of the interesting things that you talk about when you give a tour at the center?
Okay. One of the things that we always mention on the daily tours is when the center was originally built in 1969, the paint shop had a painting rack that allowed them to attach a flat that was the largest stage opening, and they could actually paint the backdrop on this painting rack and lower it 26 feet into the floor without having to climb up and down the ladders. So that was one of the amazing things. Also, our scene shop itself just has many amazing things to it. The fact that the air system in there removes all the harmful dusts and pollutants 7 times an hour completely changes the entire air in there. Also, the fact that the shop is another building within a main building. The fact that they can be working in there while there's a performance going on right below the playhouse seating, and nobody would ever know. Some of the considerations that were taken into effect yeah. for that.
Yeah, that's important.
How about things like the origin of the marble on the walls and
The main lobby is mainly the east side of the building is covered by large marble walls. The marble was mined from Chiaro, Italy, and the Krannerts actually sent a gentleman there for 6 months to pick the proper veining that he thought Mrs. Krannert would like. Large slabs were brought back here to the States, sliced in half and butterflied so that they were laid across the lobby to mimic each other.
Oh, yeah.
So the marble lobby was actually taken into consideration how much design of it into the aspect of the lobby.
Yeah. There's actually a quite well-known artist from the past that used that same quarry.
Yeah, Michelangelo was one of the original users of the marble there.
Wow.
If you've ever seen any of his sculptures, they're very pristine white, so that's why they actually had to go down so far in the mine to get the proper veining.
And then all that teak.
Yes.
And then all that teak.
A lot of teak.
It's beautiful. Let's talk about a little bit about the season that's coming up, the 30th anniversary season. I've mentioned some of those who I highlighted in my planning calendar because those are on my list. But who are you excited about, Michael?
Well, me personally, that's a tough one because I have the pleasure of inviting all of these guests to perform in the marquee season and working with the resident producers. Mm-hmm. Bruce Howerson, the head of theater, is a wonderful leader for that department and has picked all kinds of great plays to be done. Kurt Klipstadter, the head of opera. I'm not sure that Kurt actually realized this, but when the Elixir of Love was programmed for this season, it happens to be that Elixir of Love was also performed at Kranich Center in its very first season. So good reason to come out and check out how Donizetti has survived over the last 30 years. Pat Knowles, the head of our dance department, does a fantastic job of bringing very adventurous, intriguing work into the theaters at Kranert in conjunction with her faculty and students. And so I have a lot of anticipation, eager anticipation on the resident producer side. And the School of Music, by the way, outside the Department of Opera, has a wonderful array of recital, orchestral, chamber music performances, and the Sinfonia da Camera and the Champagne Urbana Symphony. Those are all great things. On the marquee side, there are some things happening that I can't help but be eagerly anticipating. For one thing, the St. Petersburg Philharmonic kicks off our Great Hall series. This is Russia's crown jewel orchestra. Yuri Timurkhanov, the leading Russian orchestral conductor, will be conducting the group. Denise Graves, the most phenomenal mezzo-soprano to hit the operatic scene in years, comes in December. Andras Schiff, a true pianist's pianist, Pollini and Marie Pariah, Richard Good, Alfred Brendel, all these great pianists today look at Andras as being the leading pianist of his generation and to carry that whole tradition forward. Chick Corea, as you mentioned, for me, has always been one of the greats in jazz. Chick is always looking for new modes of expression. I'm so much looking forward to that. There is a terrific violinist who's making a smash return to the concert stage, Nigel Kennedy, who, when he first hit the concert scene several years ago, was an immediate hit with the younger generations. He wears his hair a little spiky. He's colorful. He'll drive up to the gig in a red convertible. Very controversial guy in some ways, but can just play the heck out of the repertoire. He's going to be coming back onto he's going to come to Kranich Center for the first time, performing not only Bach's Chaconne and works by Bartok, but also his arrangements for electroacoustic ensemble of the works of a composer, a musician that I also have a great fondness for, Jimi Hendrix. And I think that'll be one of those bridge the generations and bridge the audience gap type performers we have coming into Kranert this year that I think will be very special. Actually, I'd like to let Rebecca and Frank also share some of their favorites here.
Sure.
Well, one of my personal favorites is dance, and the Margie Jenkins Dance Company is coming in May with Olympia Dukakis to do a new work based on aging of women, and I think it's going to be really something very, very different, and I can't wait to see that. I think probably the Philip Glass and Robert Wilson Monsters of Grace project has got me absolutely excited. It's a difficult thing to describe, and I'll probably let Mike help with the description. But basically, from what I understand, it's an animated opera with Philip Glass Ensemble performing. We will actually have 3D glasses, and we'll be watching a huge, huge animated type of performance along with Philip Glass. And I think it's a new art form. It's something totally different that is hard to explain because it hasn't been done, and I cannot wait for that performance.
That's going to be a blast.
Yeah, that does sound like fun. Frank, I know that the Krannert Center Student Association has Taste of the Arts coming up.
Yes, it
among
does.
Among other things.
Yes. I think it's coming up October 18th. Mm-hmm. And that takes place in the Krannert Center lobby. One of the things that KCSA has done recently is gone back to the educational philosophy that Mrs. Krannert has established and done a lot of outreach projects. One of the main things is Taste of the Arts, mm-hmm. trying to get exposure for people who just may not be skilled in the arts or have a taste for them, as the title says, and expose them to what actually goes on in the arts, the different fields that they can take, and gives them just a little bit of what's going on. Also, one of the new things that they're trying, it's a very experimental thing, is called the Sundial. We do, in our spring of the year, we do On the Rocks in the Krannert Center Amphitheater. This is kind of an offspring of that, and they're doing a high school written play. And what they're doing is taking tech students from the high schools, and with college actors, each tech student is going to shadow a college technical position and be backed up by a mentor of a college age and do an actual full-scale production. I believe that's taking place in Gregg Hall on November 20th. And we're kind of getting back into the educational philosophy of spreading the arts out to everybody.
Great. Fantastic. I saw a CD... go across the console here.
Yeah, we have two very recent Grammy Award winners on our season this year. Dee Dee was the first, and the Emerson String Quartet is the other. And I'd just love for the listeners to get a taste of how the Emerson interprets middle period Beethoven, which is a lot of people's favorite Beethoven.
All right, let's take a little listen. That is the Emerson String Quartet, and they will be at Krannert Center on the 25th of October. I was looking up the date, the planning calendar there. Let's mention quickly one of the best ways that I think to keep up on what's happening in Krannert is to visit the website, the internet site. And off the top of my head, I think the address is www.kcpa.uiuc.edu.
That's right.
Is that it?
That's right. You got it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's one way you can order tickets through the website. You can also give us an email at crantix@uiuc.edu. We'll take orders by fax, mail, phone. Any way you can get to us, we'd love to hear from you. We can send out any kind of information you want, add you to our mailing list in specific genres that you're interested in, or just the massive mailing list, and you'll receive everything. We can customize that to anybody's needs.
Mm-hmm. We were talking just a bit ago about, before we listened to the Emerson String Quartet, about the Krannert Center Student Association, and Frank Repas, who's a past president, is... one of the voices you've been hearing this afternoon. Michael, you wanted to pursue that just a little bit, about the importance of that organization.
Yes. This is another thing that's very special about Krannert Center. The Krannert Center Student Association is celebrating its 30th anniversary, as the center itself celebrates its 30th anniversary. They've been with us from the very beginning. It is a model organization of student volunteer support. There is, again, none that equals it in the country. The membership is some 300 strong, and the services that the association provides us with, the ushering services, the tour services, all kinds of other support that we get from the students over the course of the year are invaluable, and it is a great source of spiritual enrichment as well. I think that I can speak freely by... I hope I don't misspeak myself. It goes both ways.
Yeah, KCSA, Krannert Center Student Association, is usually known better as KCSA, around the building and to other organizations. They are a registered student organization with the university, and they provide everything, as far as Mike said, as ushers and tour guides. Also, we do some backstage help if they need a particular production. Many of our operas need a lot of people to help make them happen. So with the run crews and that, our people will volunteer for that. And KCSA's members are all volunteer. They're doing this either for a love of the arts or just out to learn some more aspects of the arts themselves.
Great. In the closing couple of minutes that we do have, because we want to hear a little bit of Coco Taylor, who's going to be coming to Krannert on the 23rd and 24th of October. But, Rebecca, we want to talk about the intervals and the youth series quickly as we wrap.
Youth series involves, that we do every year at Krannert Center, involves local school districts that bring in large amounts of children in ages of pre-K through high school to see performances of various genres at our center during the day. So those are field trips. I think we had about 20,000 kids come through our doors last year on that on that program. We also have an interval series, which is a series of free noontime concerts in our lobby. We actually have one coming up this Friday, October 2nd, Tony Zamora Jazz Ensemble. And those are wildly popular, fun place to spend your noon hour. And we have that series mailer available if anybody's interested.
And for more information, you can visit the website at www.kcpa.uiuc.edu or call 217-333-6280 or 800-KCPATIX for tickets.
That's right.
That's Krannert Center for the Performing Arts tickets.
That's right.
All right. An easy way to remember it. All right, that is Rebecca McBride, the Associate Director of Marketing and Patron Services. Michael Ross, the Director, thank you very much for coming today. And Frank Repas, past President of the Krannert Center Student Association. Thank you all for being with us, and really good luck on the 30th anniversary season and beyond.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you so much.
I hope you all have as much enjoyment putting all of this on as I know the consumers do who take it all in.
We do.
We do,
thank
indeed.
You.
And
sure.
Coming on the 23rd and 24th of October to Krannert Center will be Coco Taylor.